St. Simon and Jude are kind of a little bit some of the lesser known saints. They're not mentioned nearly as much. I believe Jude is mentioned in Luke and then Acts, and so it's very brief. And then, you know, Simon is mentioned in the four lists of the apostles, but it's but we don't know too much about their life. And of course, you'll see Jude is a little confusing sometimes, because sometimes it's so Judas or Jude or Thaddeus or Jude Thaddeus or things like that. And there's a lot in the tradition that says, well, it was kind of difficult to be named Judas after Judas Iscariot. And so that's why they really changed the name to Jude and said, you know, because the association with that name was so tarnished at that point, so that we have St. Jude. And I was reading a little bit about trying to figure out if we knew why St. Jude is the, you know, this patron saint of lost causes. Or another way to say that too is difficult situations. Sometimes when you hear lost causes, they're like, oh man, you know, I had a friend who was recently going through a divorce, and somebody gave him a St. Jude medal. He's like, and I looked it up, it was the patron saint of lost causes. It was like, he's like, Pete, am I a lost cause? I was like, well, no, think of it, difficult situations. We don't really use the terminology lost cause as much these days. But, and so we don't exactly know why. And it might even just be because he was so sidelined by his own namesake. You know, not much was known about him that he was assigned the patron saint of lost causes. I think the Lord in his infinite wisdom probably has more of a reason even why he would do that. But as I think about any day where we celebrate the apostles, I certainly think about my own vocation and vocations in general. And it's kind of amazing that image that we have, especially in this first reading to the Ephesians, because, you know, the Lord tells Peter that he's going to be this foundation of the church, but then Jesus himself is also the cornerstone and the capstone, and we hear that capstone language today here. So he's both that first piece that's put in place on a building that everything is really built around. It's the one thing that has to be level, lined up, so that everything that connects to it can be built off of it. And then he's also that final capstone on the top of the building as well, which is often like the decorative or the symbolic stone. This is the last one. And in 1 Peter 2, Peter talks about as well that we should all be living stones, living spiritual stones that essentially fill in all that space from cornerstone to capstone, so from Jesus to Jesus right there. So it's amazing when you just think about us as a building. And one of my favorite verses in the Bible is from 1 Corinthians 6:19, which is, you know, your body is a temple of the Holy Spirit, which is in you. You were bought with a price. And that whole entire thing, to think of ourselves is actually living stones, living temples. And you know, and we remember that every single time that we get to receive the Eucharist, just like this tabernacle that we have here, that we're actually living tabernacles, that those of us that are privileged to receive the Lord in the Eucharist become this living temple that moves out throughout the earth. And that's an unbelievable thing. And I had the opportunity to visit with a bunch of our daily parishioners yesterday. And we were talking about just how it really is not that long until we receive, those of us that go to daily Mass, it's not that long till we just go to Mass again. You know, it's like we're seeing each other throughout the day, and it's like, well, I guess we'll see each other in less than 24 hours. And it was such a funny thing to me. But what a grace it is for us to receive the Lord that often, for those of us that can, for those of us that come to daily Mass. But one of the things that I had thought about was just, I was thinking about Justin. I was thinking, like I said, my own vocation. And we know that we have three vocations. You're either called to priesthood or the religious life, the married life, or the single life. And it's pretty kind of simple from there, but it took me a longer period of time to hear the call to become a priest. And there's some really amazing aspects of that too. My cousin Andrew, which was always kind of one of those God God incidences more than coincidences. You know, it was Peter and Andrew. We both entered, he entered religious life the same year that I entered the seminary. And it was amazing that the Lord called us a little bit later, but it was still pretty profound when we were finally willing to listen. That really became kind of part of the problem. It was sort of a combination, equal parts of being willing to listen and actually being told or talked about, you know, the priesthood. I don't really remember anybody ever even presenting that as a viable option. Even as a cradle Catholic, growing up as a Catholic my whole life, I don't think anybody ever said to me, hey, do you ever think about being a priest? It just never, now granted, I did go to public school, so I didn't really have as much opportunity that sometimes you do at a Catholic school. But I know for my cousin Andrew, it was the same thing as well, that it was equal parts of our openness, but never even having the presentation of the possibility. And so that really is a responsibility for all of us. And vocations really are kind of near and dear to my heart. And there's a couple of men that I've been talking to about vocations to the priesthood, and one who's applying for the seminary right now. And obviously, you know, Justin is a great friend, and I really care about his vocation as well. But all of you, for your grandchildren and your children, if you have that opportunity to even just pose it as a question, it's amazing how I've kind of been referring to that with some of the young. Sometimes just to put something in their head and allow it to sort of bounce around in there for a little while and let them sort of ponder it and think about it as some sort of an option. Because ideally, we would have men becoming priests like when Father Carey did at like 26 rather than me at 39. You know, you have more good years to give to the church in that way. But whenever the Lord calls us is obviously like a time for rejoicing. But I beg of you, please, to have vocations kind of on your lips, to speak of them to your grandchildren and your family, so that they actually hear that this is something that they can do. It's not some weird, isolated situation. My good friend Father Tim Furlow once said, many of you, we were talking to men at Quo Vadis days, you know, young men discerning the priesthood, and he said, many of you are very, very concerned that becoming a priest will make you weird. But I'm just here to tell you that if you're a weird priest, you were probably weird before you became a priest. So don't worry about it turning you into a weird guy. And so they all kind of chuckled at that. But please continue to talk about vocation so that we could continue to have good priests to serve our parishes. God bless you all today.